The Transportation Policy Committee will come to order. We're still short of quorum, but we're also 10 minutes late, so we'd like to get through as possible with these and not come back at 6 o'clock tonight. So, one announcement that the Aviation Subcommittee will meet on Monday, March 8th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. in room 300 North. And let's see, are we making it yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Okay, let's see. Representative Holberg moves the minutes of February 25th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The minutes for February 25th are approved. The first bill up, a little bit out of order on your agenda, but that's Representative Stram. How do I say that?
Stram. Like a strand
rope. Stram, okay. I would never have spelled it that way if it was my name. But. That's House File 1683.
Yeah.
Welcome to the committee. And Representative Quisley will move House File 1683. That it be recommended to pass and sent to the General Registry.
Oh, yeah, that's a good bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, blame some Scottish person a long time ago on my name. I'm not sure why they did that either. And I'm so excited that Representative Quisley likes the bill that I have. I'm very pleased.
Excuse me. The motion, we're going to have to amend the motion. It has to go to judiciary. Representative Quisley moves that the House File 1683 recommended pass and sent to judiciary. Okay,
Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief. This has to do with, sometimes they're called MIRTs or MERTs, and they're, in my business as a police officer, we usually call them opticoms. And these are the devices on traffic semaphores that change the light to green for emergency vehicles so that they can get through and clear the intersection. Obviously, you know what those are, you know how those work. The access to buying these devices has always been, it has not been a problem historically. There's been few vendors, and it's been pretty easy to control. There are currently some websites, including eBay and others, that are marketing these devices to private citizens, marketing them to expectant fathers and private detectives and that kind of thing. And they're basically saying it's up to you, the buyer, to make sure that your state is okay with this. I can't imagine any state being okay with this, but I think the time has come for us to be a little more specific on prohibiting private ownership and use of these devices, which seems to make sense. And the bill basically just makes it a misdemeanor to operate these devices. That's a relatively straightforward bill, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Mr. Chair.
You know, you're right. We do have an amendment. Did you make that amendment to Representative Quisley?
Mr. Chair, I'll move H-17, or excuse me, 1683A1, the amendment, to get in the shape the author wants it.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, now we've heard the bill, amended it, and is there any discussion? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Strand. I know you're anticipating this possible market on eBay. Have you actually run into folks that are carrying these around in your work, or do we have some evidence of, you know, how many of these are already in circulation in the state?
I don't have any anecdotal evidence of anyone actually using these illegally at this point, no, sir. But taking that to the next logical step, the first crash or the first delayed emergency response that results in a death, we probably shouldn't wait until that time either.
Right. I agree. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative, this is an infrared device.
I believe they're infrared, or yeah, they operate an infrared mechanism, and they flash at a particular frequency that sets off those sensors.
Okay. Is there any possibility that these infrared devices can be used for spying on anybody?
I can't imagine a way that they could, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
If a black helicopter had one, maybe.
That's a later bill, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is there any other any other discussion? I see none. Representative Quigley removes his motion that House File 1683 as amended be recommended to pass and move to judiciary. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now we go back to the regular. The next bill up is House File 2107. Representative Newman. Okay. Now, what I want to do is find out is this is the first bill that this man has had up as a state representative before a committee, or is it the second bill?
Well, it's the first one in front of ours.
That's true.
That's enough.
That's enough.
Okay. All right.
Right, Frank.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And point of fact, this would be my first bill in front of this committee.
Okay.
And my second time that I have done this.
Okay.
So, right. Representative Adelson has promised me that everyone here is going to be very kind. He gave me his word.
He didn't ask us. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to move approval of House File 2107 that you recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
General Register. Thank you. Is there any... we have a bill before us, and would you like to make your presentation?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, first I would like to make a an oral amendment. I direct your attention to page 2, line 14. Cross out the word stone. Oh, I'm sorry. After the word of, add a durable. And still on line 14, cross out the word cast iron and insert metal marker.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move that oral amendment.
Okay, are there any, discussions on that? On the amendment? If not, why, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill consists essentially of two parts, Section 1 and Section 2, beginning with Section 1 on page 1 of the Bill 2107 has to do with a request by the Department of Transportation in regard to monuments that have been destroyed or obliterated as a result of highway construction. And what is being asked is that in replacing these monuments, they be replaced in such a fashion so they're no longer in the highway. It's a matter of cost in terms of the replacement of the monuments, and also a safety factor for individuals who are working on that. And on Section 1, I have, as a witness, Richard Morey, who is with the Department of Transportation, who will speak to the specifics of that portion. The second portion of the bill is Section 2, and you would find that on page 3, line 6, or beginning at line 6. And the second portion of this bill has to do with a part-time versus full-time land surveyor. In most counties in Minnesota, there is not a full-time land surveyor. This bill would provide for a surveyor hired on a part-time basis by a county to be able to prepare plats and surveys for counties. And the witness that will be here to testify with respect to Section 2 is John Freemeyer, who is the county, Carver County land surveyor. Beginning with Section 1, I would ask that Mr. Morey from the Department of Transportation address the specifics of Section 1.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Rick Morey. I am a licensed land surveyor with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. We have several suggested changes to 160.15. The first change deals with the nature of the monuments placed in the roadway. This request came to us by way of one of the county surveyors. The current statute stipulates a very specific monument that has to go in. The monument that it specifies is not currently being used in the field by practicing surveyors, nor does there a requirement for monuments outside of the roadway to have that particular kind of monument sitting at them. The current practice utilizes different tools and a different size monument. These new tools and different size monument allow the individuals placing these markers to do them much more quickly, thereby minimizing their exposure to potential fatalities, becoming fatalities in the roadway, as well as minimizing the disruption to traffic for the traffic flow for the driving public. Therefore, that's why we're requesting this change. The next change that we have requested is in the nature of the filing of the certificates of location of government coroner that accompany placing these monuments. 160.15 currently requires they be filed with the county recorder. There is another statute, 381.12, which specifically governs the remonumentation and perpetuation of the public land survey and the filing of coroner certificates. Under that statute, it specifically states that the certificates may be filed either with the county recorder or the county surveyor where they maintain an office. We are simply asking that we have the same option under this statute, especially since in those counties where there is a county surveyor, when we have attempted to file our certificates with the recorder, they often tell us, no, we don't take that, give it to the county surveyor. The last change that we are suggesting is on the individuals who can sign these coroner certificates. The current statute says engineer or land surveyor. Under Minnesota statute 326.02, the only individuals who are authorized to establish or reestablish property coroners are licensed land surveyors. Therefore, we are asking to strike the word engineer from this part of the statute to make it consistent with 326.02. I will now take your questions.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Morey, do you have a problem with the durable durable marker? Don't you need to have a one that you can locate with magnetic, so if it's underground, so you don't have, you could have durable and have something other than you could, you know, locate. You could have aluminum, or you could have even fiberglass or something. You can't find it without a lot of work. Well, is that durable satisfactory?
As you say, a magnetic would be preferable. We did have a discussion on this specific issue just toward the end of last month at the Minnesota Society of Professional Surveyors annual convention. And the point was brought up there that currently some of these corners currently are marked by stone or concrete monuments, and we did not want to require that if, in fact, that corner monument could still be used, that we have to tear out the existing monument that has a history to it and replace it with a new one. That is why we simply specified allowing any one of those types of markers.
Well, you're not just going to go around and replace markers to replace them. You're going to replace them when you're doing new construction,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
So how would that reasoning follow that?
Well, if the existing stone marker is sufficiently deep in the roadway where the road work will not disturb it, we don't want to have to replace it.
I'm not a surveyor, but I have tried to find markers from time to time, and they're very difficult after a few years. So are you leaving sufficient margin for error here so that two neighbors are not going to start shooting at each other because the lines are unable to be located properly?
I believe we are, sir.
Okay. Representative Leader, did you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Morey, normally when you have a stone that's that deep, though, you replace it on top with another marker. You don't really remove and replace the existing marker in most cases, do you? And also, don't you, in highway construction, sometimes they have a temporary that really isn't, it replaces a temporary one over the permanent one?
To address your first question about the stone marker being buried that deep, in that case, we would be placing another marker over it, and the statute requires that marker be visible at the road surface. And the I'm not 100% clear. I understand the question, the second part of the question relating to the temporary marker.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Morey, in highway construction, normally some of the crews, whether they're a licensed surveyor or not, aren't they replacing temporarily a monument, or not a monument, basically it's a monument over an existing one, and isn't that considered a temporary monument?
No, it's not considered a temporary monument, sir. It's a perpetuation of the existing corner, and when such a monument is placed over an existing monument, by law, we are still supposed to file a certificate of location of government corner identifying the nature of the monument that is there. In this case, the certificate would reflect the fact that this new marker is placed over the existing marker. So it should, the certificate of location that's on file should indicate both the nature of the monument you can see from the surface as well as what is underneath it. And as far as the crews placing it, those crews should be operating under the direction of a licensed land surveyor.
Are there any other questions or comments? If not, Representative Holberg renews your motion that the House file 2107 as amended be recommended pass and moved to the General Registry. All those in favor of that motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Well, that's two. Now, where do you go for your third one? Three and out, you know.
I don't know yet.
Okay. All right. The next bill is House File 2475, 2479, Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to have a three-bill limit imposed on me for as long as I'm down here. It'd be just fine. In any case, with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 2479 and that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations.
Okay. I'll get it on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is the MnDOT housekeeping bill for this session. I'm happy to be joined today by the happy gang from MnDOT, and in sort of a flashback episode, Mr. Werke is also available, I understand, to testify on various aspects of the bill, should he be called upon. Mr. Chairman and members, if I can turn your attention to the bill, Section 1 makes changes to clarify the cost-sharing agreement, that MnDOT has authority to enter into with the tribes in Minnesota. Section 2 authorizes the commissioner of the Department of Transportation to require electronic bidding for contracts that have a value in excess of $5 million. Section 3 states that the County State Aid Advisory Committee does not expire. Section 4 states that the Natural Preservation Route Advisory Committee does expire and is repealed. Section 5 states that the County State Aid Screening Board does not expire. Section 6 states that the Municipal State Aid Advisory Committee does not expire. Section 8 deals with local weight limits, allowing local jurisdictions to establish 10-ton roads without MnDOT approval. Section 9 extends the seasonal load limits on gravel roads. Section 10 provides that the Local Road Improvement Fund Advisory Committee does not expire. And Section 11 is simply a repealer to get rid of obsolete language dealing with the Major Transportation Projects Commission, which did expire on June 30th of 2003, if my memory serves me correctly. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions and, as appropriate, punt to the folks at MnDOT.
Representative Quigley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the author on Section 9, we're extending it for gravel roads. We've been getting beat up for having too strict of restrictions on these road restrictions. Is there a reason we're going to for gravel roads to take an another 2 weeks, which are going to be mostly the agricultural roads that are out there, and that's going to be somewhat controversial?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Quigley, the reason MnDOT seeks the extension is a study which was recently completed gauging the recovery of gravel roads during the spring period, and it was determined empirically that these gravel roads do not regain their full strength until 2 weeks beyond the current limitation period. But I'd also be happy to defer to Eric Radin on this question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Eric Radin from MnDOT Office of Government Affairs, and the Local Road Research Board recently completed, or is in the process of completing, a three-year study evaluating the strength of gravel roads. And as Representative DeLaForest indicated, we found that it takes about 2 weeks longer for gravel roads to recover their strength. And I believe you have a handout with a chart indicating that. This is something we're carrying for on the behalf of local units of government, because we only have a very small portion of the state trunk highway system that is still gravel road. But as you indicated, Representative Quigley, most gravel roads are under county or other local government jurisdiction. We do also have somebody here that's worked on the study if you want to get into the results of that study more deeply.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a major change because we're adding 2 weeks to this. This does affect agriculture very heavily because a lot of the roads that they travel on are going to be gravel. I'm somewhat sympathetic, but adding another 2 weeks to the road restrictions, especially during spring harvest or spring planting time, really is quite a hardship. So I'd be cautious on doing this, and I would like some more input maybe on this before I would support it, because this is going to draw a lot of attention from the ag community.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the Association of Counties is also present. They would perhaps like to testify, but I should indicate as well that counties do currently have the authority to extend spring load restrictions on gravel roads, but they have to go out and post them as extended, and this would be a blanket extension for a two-week period so that they wouldn't have to go out and post each individual road.
Representative Quigley, are the heavy loads on these roads in the spring or in the fall when the crops are going to move?
Mr. Chairman, this can affect just about everything, because you can have everywhere from milk trucks hauling daily. You can have feed trucks going in and out of different farms. You can have fertilizer trucks bringing in fertilizer in the spring, even seed trucks. And they're under pressure now, and I'm not sure extending 2 weeks is going to make anybody happy out there. I understand AMC is here to testify probably in support of it, but there's going to be a lot of people caught with this spring if this is passed in the next couple weeks. I'm not aware of this, and probably start getting ticketed for it. So I'm somewhat hesitant to do this.
Representative DeForest, do you have other witnesses that would care to speak to this?
If AMC wishes to testify, they can step forward. But Mr. Chairman and Representative Quigley, regardless of the outcome of any testimony today, certainly I am not unsympathetic to the points you raise. And certainly this bill has a couple more stops to go, and I am more than willing to work with you to meet the concerns of all the other folks.
Well, Representative Quigley, would you like to answer your testimony? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that'd be fine.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Nathan Richmond with the Minnesota County Engineers Association, co-chair of the Legislative Committee, and asked to speak for this aspect of Mr. DeForest's bill. MnDOT representative alluded to the fact that the counties have the authority to post longer. A quick review of our County Engineers Association yesterday I got 44 responses back in 24 hours. 32 of those counties already post for 2 weeks, something to do 2 weeks, around 2 weeks with their forces, and leave the spring load restrictions on their gravel and weakest roads. So 32 of the 44 counties that responded are already using their statutory ability to post extra. This would switch it around so we could not have to post unless needed, instead of posting every time.
Well, Mr. Chair, in the past we've given more flexibility to MnDOT and others to actually take the conditions of the roads and know what's going on out there. Sometimes you don't need an extra week, sometimes you need two. This, the way the language reads, would be mandated an extra 2 weeks. There's no flexibility for the county to go out and determine the road is in good shape, maybe at the end of the time, because the weather, whether maybe the frost heaving, the conditions because of rain, snow, whatever, they may be ready to be on at an earlier date, and this is pretty much putting into state law that it's going to be an extra 2 weeks period, and there's no flexibility for the county and or state or township to look at the roads and determine that they're going to be maybe able to let people on them sooner than that. So that's the problem I see with this, and we've been more into flexibility with counties and cities to determine when and where they can lift restrictions in the past. This seems to be going just the opposite direction of mandating an extra 2 weeks.
Well, we have a couple more questions over here. I don't think we've settled the question that you're interested in. I don't know if you got anybody else to speak to that. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Queasley, speaking towards the flexibility, the load limits gives the blanket time frame. If the county wants to extend earlier or later because their local conditions are different than the blanket time, they have that flexibility, and they will retain that flexibility. So if you had a good spring in your area relative to the Minnesota DOT load limit area, you could pull earlier and do a special thing different than the blanket. You can now, and you would retain that ability.
Mr. Chair, that is my point. A couple years ago, we changed the law to allow more flexibility so we don't have these set time frames. And the springs vary from year to year when the road is in the worst conditions and when people should not have heavy trucks on them. This automatically just adds an extra 2 weeks to gravel roads. It doesn't allow for any flexibility. So I'm wondering why we're going to being less flexible and not allowing counties and townships to make up their own mind when trucks should be on there. It seems like we're going in the opposite direction that we have gone in the past of allowing flexibility.
Well, let's leave that subject for the moment, if we may, and Representative Slawick has a question.
Mr. Chair, I have a question about a different section.
Representative Hausman?
Minor, about other sections, too.
Okay. I wonder if we shouldn't put a red mark by this issue and move on with this. Would that be acceptable? We're going to get a couple more cracks at this in other committees.
That's fine.
All right, thank you. Is there any further testimony or questions, or are you going to...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Representatives Hausman and Slawick also had some questions about different aspects of the bill.
Yes.
Be happy to stand.
Now's the time, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative De La Forest, I had just a question about Section 1, cost-sharing agreements with the tribes. Is this a technical amendment, and how is that different from before? And also, did you meet with the tribes, or has MnDOT gotten their approval on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick, I'll defer to Mr. Radim, but it's my understanding that this correction is more technical in nature. It clarifies the nature of these agreements, that they are meant to be cost-sharing agreements, primarily where a tribal road may intersect with a state highway, and this clarifies MnDOT's ability to enter into those agreements with the tribes for cost-sharing, because, as I understand, there was a little bit of confusion before, just given the sovereign status of nations, and we wanted to be clear about that, but I'd be happy to defer to Mr. Udine as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, yes, the tribes actually brought the change forward last session, and it was not an agency initiative, but it was an initiative of the tribes last session, and they are supportive of this change as well. And what this would allow us to do would be to treat tribal authorities the same way we treat other local units of government when we enter into cost-sharing agreements for road work with cities and counties and that type of thing. We would like to have the same sort of agreements with the tribes.
Representative Hausman?
That answered one of my questions. The other is Section 4. So the point of this is now every local entity makes the decision about designating a natural preservation route. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I had a feeling you were going to have a question about this section, but in any case, again, I think Mr. Dean can add some context, but what we have here is these natural preservation routes committees were basically rubber stamps. They never had a negative recommendation to the commissioner of the Department of Transportation. They basically became a middleman, so to speak, and this is a streamlining process that will allow local units to directly send their requests to MnDOT.
And, Mr. Chair, my reason for asking was when I saw, for example, scenic considerations, I didn't know who made up that advisory committee, but a tourism person might apply across the board some specific parameters that the average person wouldn't think about, and they're looking at it from the perspective of the tourism industry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the authority to designate the routes will and always has rested with the Commissioner of Transportation. This committee just was sort of a middle step between the county board request and the commissioner making the decision. And we have checked with the people who served on the committee, and they are in agreement that this committee should be allowed to expire. And as Representative De La Forest indicated, they hadn't ever turned down a request. Also, it was difficult to find people willing to serve on these committees because you have to go outside of the area where the route is being designated, so you have to get people to travel from other parts of the state to serve on these committees.
So, Mr. Chair, I heard you say there still is some state role in conversation with them.
Right.
Yeah. Representative House?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Radin, coming back with this question that was asked earlier on Section 1, can you live without that change for another year? Can you work it and make it? The reason I'm asking, I'll be very blunt. I look at this, and I look at this bill as amendment bait for compacts, for casinos, for many different things. And if you don't need it, let's take it out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howes, there are a couple of projects up on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, and I'll need to double-check what the schedule is on those, but I know that there are two bridge projects up there that we're hoping to use this section of statute to enter into cost-sharing agreements on those two bridge projects.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up? Is your work with the Red Lake Reservation different than any highways in any other reservation, correct?
No, Mr. Chairman, but we have not had this ability before to enter into agreements. We've always just gone in and done the work on our own, and the tribes are interested in partnering with us on doing work on state trunk highways on Indian reservations.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rudin, could you have some folks from the tribes just come and talk to me before this is heard in GovOps?
Sure, absolutely. And I'll check, too, on the schedule on these two projects as to when they're planned.
Representative Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative De La Forest. My question is about Section 11, the repealer. Can you tell us why you're repealing the Major Transportation Projects Commission?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Larson, this is actually a section that probably was more appropriate for the revisor's bill, which I've also agreed to carry. But the Major Transportation Projects Commission has already expired. So what this language is doing is really just a ministerial function of deleting the language. It actually isn't causing the commission to expire. The commission has already expired. This language just removes the language off the books.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative De La Forest, maybe we ought to breathe life back into it, but okay. I won't offer amendment at this time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Larson, if memory serves me correctly, as I stated before, I think it was June 30th of 2003 that the commission expired, so we'll have to play like Lazarus if we want that thing back.
Representative Hauser?
Yeah. Just to go back to Representative Hauser's point for a minute, I don't know if I could put Mr. Williams on the spot and just ask for his point of view. If you didn't have that word in there, does it exclude cost-sharing agreements? I mean, basically, you say the commissioner may enter into agreements with Indian tribes. It seems to me when you add another word, you get narrower rather than excluding, so that the word, you know, agreements could already include discussion of cost sharing, even though we didn't put that word in.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, the language of the existing law describes the agreements as being for the purpose of providing maintenance, design, and construction to highways on tribal lands. My interpretation of that language would be that the allocation of costs for those activities would be an inherent element of those agreements, and that they would be primarily, but not exclusively, cost-sharing agreements already.
Are there any other questions on House File 2479 or any more discussion?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would just mention in closing that certainly to address Representative Howes's issues and Representative Queasley, we will certainly be in touch with them prior to going to governmental operations to address those concerns. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion that House File 2479 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations.
Representative Queasley?
Mr. Chair, not so fast. Section 9 is still a problem. This is transportation policy and it should be dealt with in transportation policy. We are not allowing for any flexibility in this new clause. And it's not, a county engineer cannot waive it. And it really concerns me that we are lengthening those restrictions and putting it in state law. We have worked in the past to allow more flexibility. This truly extends it and makes it so even the county engineer can't even look at the roads. And, you know, Representative Leader can speak to this also, but it does concern me that we are adding this and it's not been widely debated. We always seem to spend a lot of time in this committee working on road restrictions and the weight that they carry. I'm very concerned about this provision when it comes to the agriculture perspective.
Well, isn't that one of the provisions you were going to look at between now and government ops, or am I?
Mr. Chair, I'd just soon delete Section 9, and if the language can be changed, we can put it back in on the floor, being okay. This is transportation policy. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll move to delete Section 9.
Is there any other discussion on, is there any discussion on the deletion of Section 9?
Mr. Chairman, if Representative Queasley is going to move to delete the section, then I'd like AMC to come back to the table, and perhaps we should have some more debate about Section 9.
Okay.
This is a big thing for the rural minister.
Welcome back.
Thank you again. We were going to, Nathan Richmond, County Engineers Association again, and speaking for AMC, or County Engineers Association. We were going to set up a meeting with Mr. Queasley, but I get it got pushed up to right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to be a bully on it. This is transportation policy, and this is where you try to look at things that deal with transportation. And I'm not trying to get it to my committee. I'm trying to deal with it here. If we can do some language changes to make that happen, that would be fine with me. But the way it reads, it's going to be very difficult to do in a committee setting. And I don't want to hold up the bill, and that's why we could delete it now, work on language, and if it's amendable to both the ag groups and others, make it workable and not make it so much in stone as state statute, as this provision does do.
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, in the interest of addressing that concern, I'd accept the deletion of Section 9 as a friendly amendment at this time, and we'll see if we can work on this bill in another forum for that section.
I think I'm going to lay this over at the moment, right in the midst of all this, till we get a little more straightened on it. There's a couple more amendments that are coming, and I think it would be better if we work those out and come back with the bill. Representative Quisley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure this has to go through one or two more committees and seeing the deadline schedule and not those committees. I'm not trying to delay the bill, so I'm hoping that the committee realizes that. I'm trying to make sure this bill keeps moving. I don't know whether amendments are coming forward.
Right.
Oh, Howells. Okay. But,
that's right, Mr. Chairman. If we could, given the deadlines, we would like the bill to move forward. And in the interest of moving the bill forward, I'd certainly accept Representative Quisley's amendment as a friendly amendment in order to get this bill moving over to governmental operations. And certainly there's no reason why in the interim we can't work on Representative Howe's amendment and concerns, which seem to be less related to transportation policy than Representative Quisley's concerns.
You are going to make an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, actually...
Right, we have one amendment before us now. And
could I amend the amendment? Make a motion to amend the amendment?
Yeah.
Then add the words and 9, or and section 1.
So we have...
delete sections 9 and 1.
Can I move to split the amendment?
I don't think that's an order, Mr. Chair.
I don't want to come back at 4:30, so let's move this thing and see what we can do with it. So we have an amendment to the amendment. Would you, let's see, we are then voting on the
House amendment
To remove section 1. All in favor of that?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, that fails. And we're now back to the Quisley amendment to remove section 9. Is there any more discussion on that? If not, all in favor of that amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted, and we now have the bill as amended before us. Is there more discussion?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll try one more time here. I'll move House File 2479 now as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations.
Any more discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted, and the bill moves to government ops with a lot of pros and hopes on our side here. The next bill is well, now we have some fun. House File 1913, Representative Quisley.
Oh, Quisley's up.
Be gentle, folks. Be gentle.
Okay. I'm Representative Quisley. In the interest of time, your testifiers were for and against, if they can keep their comments as brief as possible.
Mr. Chairman, to keep it brief, I'll have Carol Lovewell from the counties come up and present the bill. She's going to probably speak the same thing I'm going to talk to you about, and I'll let her, since she's more technical, to go into it. Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 1913, and it has to go to local government, I believe, next.
Yes.
So I move this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name's Carol Lovrell with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We're here seeking plat approval and the repeal of municipal approval in order to move our projects forward in a more cost-effective manner. Many times the cities are held hostage by their developers. They don't acquire the necessary right-of-way. They demand their own access points. It makes that particular roadway unsafe, congested, and in the future we have to come back and buy out those businesses at a huge cost to the counties.
I have with me today Commissioner Dennis Berg, the chair of my policy committee, the AMC Transportation Policy Committee, and I also have a county engineer from Anoka County, Doug Fisher, to give you some more technical information related to this issue.
Mr. Chair, I'm Dennis Berg, chair of the AMC Transportation Policy Committee. This is an issue that came to the Policy Committee. In fact, it's been before us a number of times in the past, but through the Engineers Association, it did get unanimous support from the Policy Committee. At least, I better be careful using the word unanimous. I know it was by far a major majority, and my recollection is that it was, in fact, unanimous. But I think rather than spend a lot of time on it, Doug Fisher, the Anoka County engineer, has prepared a handout that I think you've received, and I'll let him go over that with you, and then I'll make myself available for questions.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County engineer, and I've been asked to testify and prepare information on this item. On behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, you can see on the handout that has been distributed. This is also in AMC's platform. It's in the Metropolitan Inter-County Association platform as well as the County Engineer platform on this item. On page two, very briefly, executive summary. The problem is counties do not have plat authority for plats adjacent to their county roads. Cities, right now, the current law, we can comment on those plats as it pertains to impacts to our county highways, but the cities and townships are free to disregard those concerns. The solution that we're seeking, again, is statutory change, which would allow certain plat review authority by the counties for only those plats that are adjacent to county highways. Moving on to page three, I kind of summed up the issue. When a plat goes in, say it's a residential subdivision goes in, there's impacts to private utilities, telephone, gas, power. There's impacts to sewer and water systems, city streets, and all those impacts are controlled and administered by the appropriate infrastructure owner. But in the case of county roads, these plats may cause impacts for safety and congestion, impacts to our county roads, and we have no authority to do anything about that in the platting process. So that's really the crux of the issue that we're trying to change here. Moving on to page four, it's kind of the process that works right now, a little flow chart. I won't spend a lot of time on this. Essentially, when a city receives a plat, they submit it to the county engineer's office if it's adjacent to a county highway. We have 30 days to review it, and you can see the items that we review it for: right-of-way dedication, drainage, access, spacing, congestion, safety, essentially impacts to the county highway. We comment on those plats, and then the city may or may not incorporate those comments into the plat. And to us, that is what the problem is. We'd like to have a more firmer control to see that those requirements get made. On page five, you can see the existing statutory language that's in there that provides for this review. But again, if you read the existing statute, does not compel a city or township to incorporate those. They do, if they do not incorporate those comments, they are required to meet with us to discuss. But again, we meet to discuss, they can still say, well, we're not going to incorporate those changes. So that's the existing statute, and that's on page 5 and 6. And again, the statute was recently revised a few years ago because this issue did come up a couple years ago. There was a compromise that was worked out that resulted in the current statutory. We still have some problems with the compromise as it relates to we're not getting our full 30-day review period. We're not getting formal notice when our comments are not incorporated. There's times when a contractor will come in asking for a permit to work in our right-of-way, and we'll say, well, this isn't even supposed to be here. We didn't know that the city approved the plat allowing that access. So sometimes we're caught off guard and puts projects in a quandary there. Even though Another problem that we have is the city may approve an access onto a county road. We still have a permit authority. There could be a very big dilemma if a plat is approved with multiple accesses onto a county road, and we say, well, we're not going to permit all those. There's been a lot of time, expense, land bought, developed, and all of a sudden, if access is different than what the developer had proposed or submitted to the city, that could lead to a problem. Also, Ms. Loveroe talked about if the developments aren't along county roads aren't done in accordance with future needs of the highway, the right-of-way dedications may be wrong, setbacks may be wrong, access may lead to a degradation of the highway. So we just have, if the plat isn't done correctly, it's going to cost us more money in the future, it's going to cause more heartache to the landowners, the developers, and ultimately the city as well. So we felt that we would like to have that control to ensure that doesn't happen. Again, I'm trying to quickly go through this. You can review a lot of that. On page 10 now, this statutory change applies for certain things. It applies, and that's the right-of-way dedications, adequacy of drainage that comes into the county highway right-of-way, the control of the access, and again, improvements that may be needed to be made on the county roadway to ensure that we have safe and congested free highways. And pages 11 through 13 is the language, and that's been distributed separately. Again, we feel that we can do this process with these statutory changes. The process on page 14 now, process can be timely. It can allow for development and redevelopment in the cities and townships. It will provide for variances when it doesn't meet our established guidelines for access spacing or right-of-way dedication. And we hope to reflect the city's own and city and township's own guidelines through our process as well. This process will not affect the city or township's land use controls, their planning and zoning authority, or other local authority that they have. We're only interested in those impacts to the county highway. How they choose to develop their land, how they choose to zone it, is not a county issue that would be affected by this statutory language. We're, personally, as a county engineer, I do not want to get into that business. I just want to have enough problems just managing impacts to the county highway. Certainly, the advantages on page 15 that I've identified, you know, again, we will not interfere with the development. They can develop land how they choose, but again, we can control the impacts to our infrastructure that we are responsible for. Again, because we do have a permit process, if that conflicts with the plat process, there could be a legal dispute. If we can go through the platting process, then the plat will match what will allow for permits, and we'll eliminate any legal disputes which may arise if we refuse to issue a permit for access that's approved by a plat. For the developers, no surprises. Again, for anybody, the county, city, or the developer, the cities, I know my cities that we work with are always asking that we're consistent, because they'll look and they'll say, well, why didn't you're making us do this improvement to a county highway for this developer, but you didn't do it for that city over there. My response is, well, we asked for that in that city. They failed to implement that. So, you know, when we can't control those, our requirements, cities can pick and choose from one to another, and the developers get confused. They say, well, I didn't have to do it in this city. Why am I doing it here? What we're trying to do is, if we have this authority, we can make sure that there's no surprises, that we're consistent, and all cities are being fair. On page 17, I'd point out that this is not new. Since 1974, Dakota County has had this plat authority. And so my comment here is, you know, has county plat authority stopped or slowed down the growth of development? And as you know, Dakota County is one of the fastest growing, highest developing counties. And so I would say county plat authority has not.
However, it has allowed for a consistent and orderly growth, especially as it relates to development along county highways, and that the businesses could grow and develop knowing specifically from the county what's going to happen to that county highway in the future. So again, we feel that it works in Dakota County. We'd like to extend that statutory language to the other counties.
How did you get it? From the state at that several years ago? How did you get the authority to do that?
Dakota County. That Dakota County came in specifically as a county.
Okay, you got the authority for Dakota County solely from the state. Okay.
It was in 2003, it looks like, Mr. Chair.
It originally was 1974. I just copied that out of the current statute.
Okay.
Statute.
Okay. We have to speed up here now.
Last page 19. This bill also includes a repealer that repeals the language, the requirement that cities have to approve a county state aid highway improvement plan before the project can move forward. So that is the one repealer that is added onto this statute. I just wanted to point that out. And that concludes my handout, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. What next, Representative Quigley?
Mr. Chair, I think that's my test fires. I think we have opposition to my bill.
I see.
I can't believe it, but we have a question.
Who? Yeah. Oh, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fisher, is it?
Yes.
The Dakota County language that was written specifically for them, they've been on the books now for, what, nearly 30 years, you say?
Yes.
Does that give them, the county board, full approval over the plat, or just for the things we're asking for here, drainage, right-of-way access, and entry points? Right-of-way width and set-aside, I guess, is those three things.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I believe it is just for... Or do they have land authority? No. It is for. It is similar as to the issues that we're asking for here.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holder.
If I might, it's more extensive than what's in this bill.
The
Dakota County provision is much more extensive than what is being asked for in this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair. If I may ask, then Representative Holberg, how's that worked out in effect? Then is it doing okay? Or
actually, from my perspective, it's a vital piece to transportation planning in any region. It is, in my opinion, unfair for the county as a whole to take valuable resources, build a county road, and then have a local municipality use that for access to their retail. Development or whatever with multiple accesses onto the road that cause congestion without the county having some say in how this is used. A county can say, we're only going to do half mile access and you're going to have to do backage roads or, you know, something else in order to keep traffic flowing. And the cities don't like it particularly, but the end result is, in my opinion, a much more effective county road system that is supposed to serve a more regional function, and then it forces the cities and the locals to look at the feeder system to that regional system in a way that they are not building off of the investment of the county to the detriment of the region.
Thank you.
We have... opponents, next, which would be League of Cities, I guess, first off. Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, or do we have both?
Mr. Chairman, Roger Peterson, with the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. I think I'll probably speak for both the League and the AMM today. The League people had to be in other committees doing some things. AMFIN was tied up. If it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, I'd like to see the elected officials and administrators that we have here testify first, and I'll kind of wrap up in the end. So everybody gets a chance.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. David Baudet, Mayor of the City of Oak Park Heights. And I would certainly say that I'm certainly opposed to the changes that are proposed in this bill. I think it's certainly admirable that we want to work together as counties and governments to facilitate an efficient transportation system, but it's hard for me to understand how the county sitting in helping the city approve the plat would make development more cost-effective or in a more timely manner. There's an inconsistency in the law that would be interesting is that the county is supposed to receive the information 5 days, but yet a city can return the information on a plat in 10. So I'm not sure exactly if these times would be coordinated. And I think that having the county is also going to take more time. On issues of right-of-way, of course, what this means is that if we're going to have limited access when we're talking about developing new land areas, of course, the developer or somebody is going to have to pay for those roads. Those interim roads are going to come from somewhere, and ultimately somebody is going to have to pay for those costs. But in my city, we have land that was platted in the 1850s that surrounds land that's unplatted yet today. So if someone is, as XL Energy wants to subdivide a piece of property and sell it to Anderson's, if it was adjacent to the county road, would they be able to subdivide that property? The issue of the Anderson Window site on County Road 15 in Washington County, where the county is only going to allow perhaps two access to a 700-unit development for homes, probably is not sufficient. But that's all the county is willing to do. Yet the county is also upset that the city would consider changing it from industrial to housing. And so I think in terms of understanding the process and the way that we interact and work together in terms of solving both the transportation and doing the platting, I would suggest that the current law works reasonably well. I don't think anybody has gone through the process of contesting and municipal consent, and yet we're here to take away all municipal consent. Obviously, the cheapest right-of-way is through virgin territory. Washington County was going to fill in a gap of a missing link, and of course, the county proposed the solution was to move it a quarter section into undeveloped land area and build a 5.3-mile county road connection between two pieces of County Road 15. That was three communities, even though it wasn't in any one community, but three communities objected to that kind of process because it was going to change the commercial development patterns and other interesting land structure where people are going to live. So to say that not having any wherewithal to say where roads are going to be, obviously roads go with the commercial development, and these are all interconnected. And lastly, there are others that are going to talk, have conversations. Obviously, we had a bus come in for permitting, a bus garage for school district children to transport them. And we certainly took the county's recommendations and put turn lanes on. But that was directly benefit to those owners. You have counties that are requiring that things be done because they're the second or the third to the last development or the last development in an area that now benefits everybody. And there's no way that to apportion those costs back to the benefiting owners. So that's one of the unintended consequences of this piece of action, this bill. And the other unintended, just to talk about the water issue a little bit, water moves mysteriously across the county roads, but obviously county roads were designed in the early days to take the advantage of natural grade changes. So obviously in some areas of the road, water flows with the county roads because it's going downhill because that's where the natural grade was easiest to build the county road. But if the road's going, the water's going across the county road, the county doesn't seem to feel, nor the state, to contribute into the infrastructure to support the water that's going to run off the new impervious surface if it's running right or left of the road. But it really wants everybody to contribute if it runs along the road. And I think that, again, without municipal consent, without the opportunity to have give and take, without the opportunity to keep this a process where all parties understand the important nature of providing for efficient, safe transportation, understanding that there are costs that deal with this. And lastly, on the handout that you received here, in Washington County, all plats in the townships are approved by the county board. So this really is an issue just that's right toward the cities, even though it's noted in, that this is going to affect townships. Townships in Washington County, those plats are approved by the county board. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if there are any questions, I'd be willing to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And who is next? And please be brief.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Hickott, and I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Fridley. I would like to just make three important points here in terms of our concerns about the proposed legislation. These points would be timing, public involvement, and then I'd like to make a comment on the guidelines embedded in the proposed legislation. As far as timing goes, the Act states that the requirement shall not extend the time deadlines spelled out in Section 1599 of state statutes. As we know, that is the 60-day agency action law in Minnesota. And municipalities have worked diligently to keep their development processes within that 60-day time frame. In other words, to be able to have from the date of application to the date of a decision or a consensus by the City Council, we have worked to keep that within the state's laws of having that done within 60 days. The process in our city has been refined to a point where we can have a preliminary plat through the process within 53 days. It is likely that once the bill will become law, the county commission will receive the information instead of the county engineering staff. They will need to wait till their next meeting, or they will choose to wait till their next meeting so that the group can convene to talk about the plat. And then likely they will speak to their engineering staff and get additional information that they would need. They may need to reconvene in order to understand exactly what the plat implications are. But in all due respect to the county commissioners, the engineering staff at the county plays an extremely important role, and they provide extremely important feedback. As I see it, this exchange between the commission and the engineering folks, or the county board and the engineering folks, can't happen within 30 days that are outlined in the legislative suggestion here. Meanwhile, the public hearing before the municipality moves forward, and we need to do that to keep ourselves within that 60-day limitation. The feedback from the county, according to this legislation, wouldn't be due back until 35 days. A city has 5 days to get the application in, and they have 30 days to respond to it. 35 days would take us, at the local level, past the public hearing. In other words, the Planning Commission would already have heard this item by the time the county is required to respond back. I can tell you in a recent experience, I had a public hearing on February 18th. I hadn't heard back from the county staff prior to that February 18th meeting, and I made a call to them the day before that hearing to see if there were any comments. I'm still awaiting a call back on my February 18th telephone call. Meanwhile, the Planning Commission had to move forward without information from the county and make a decision based on an uncertainty about what the county's requirements might be. In summary, I think municipal planning commissions are left with that uncertainty, and this legislative proposal would certainly not help them. Public involvement is related to that, because staff in the Planning Commission have the possibility of hearing back from the county that there will be changes in the plat. It leaves that uncertainty and also leaves the public, the folks that are closest to this plat, uncertain about what the implications may be. For surrounding neighborhoods, the implications may be unknown. Municipalities work very hard to keep the public involved in the public process, and this law would leave certain facts unknown until the critical juncture where the county has heard back, or the city, I'm sorry, has heard back from the county. That could mean that buildings need to be moved, that the plat needs to be rearranged in a way that streets need to enter at other locations, and impacts to neighborhoods, the folks that are most closely associated with this plat or near the plat, might get a surprise later in the process after the public hearing has already been held. My third point is on the guidelines. If there's one point in this legislation that I think we could support, and that is that If cities have good, clear guidelines from the counties, I hear a battle today in the documents that have been testified to earlier that there's some sort of a battle between cities and the county on this issue, and frankly, I don't see it that way. I think what's important is that if the county provides adequate information to the cities ahead of time, cities are very good at protecting the interests of the county and getting access restrictions, easements, and other things that are required at the county level, and that's an important piece. I don't think we're at odds between the county and the city. I think it is important for us, though, to have the information so that we can be consistent, so that we don't confuse developers, and that we get through the process without without a lot of problems. It is important, as mentioned, that developers understand what it is that they're going to be required to do. And a fear that I have in my closing remarks is that we may be through the planning process at the municipal level, we may be through the planning commission process and the public hearing, only to have a developer find out that their development is going to be changed. At a time when developers are looking for less government, and at a time that they're complaining about the costs of development, I would ask you to seriously consider the implications of having a developer need to change their development plans quickly between the planning commission hearing and the city council at a local level. In conclusion, I would say that the statements in the legislation in lines 17 through 21 have some merit, and we wouldn't argue that standards or guidelines should be presented from the county board, and at the local level, we will protect those. But in conclusion, I would say that the rest of the legislation is wrong and should not be adopted because it keeps the public out and has the potential of having developers have a much more expensive and frustrating process. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cooley.
Mr. Chair, just to respond to some of that, the comments, I think that the whole scope, and this committee has talked about it several times, is how do you do planning? And when you're leaving out the road authority where you're dumping traffic onto and you're only getting to comment on it, and I stress the word comment on what happens to that road, where the accesses are, what where the streets are, stop lights are, that is a major concern. And it can really screw up a road system that has been well planned out by the county when you start having new stoplights pop up, new intersections, and so forth. The attempt of this bill is to do more planning. Maybe the time frames are tight and may surprise the developer, but I think this forces the cities and counties to step forward and do some planning on their road systems and not waste taxpayers' money, precious road money, with surprises. And I can look at my community, which did a new circle drive around Rochester, which is county funds, and that thing has turned into Stoplight City. It is not used as much as it should be because there's been too many stoplights put on it, new intersections put in, new accesses and so forth. The cities and counties, some way we need to get them to plan ahead of time before development happens, and this is one tool that might force that to happen.
We have about 7 minutes left here. We have a question from Representative Beard.
I thought you were calling on me.
Representative Beard, Representative Hornstein, and then we've got two other testifiers. That one is cleaning up as city manager, and the other is city administrator for city of Andover. Would you flip a coin and decide which one is going to speak, and then Roger Peterson finish up? First of all, we've got a question from Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Quisley, under the section on page 2, 17 through 21. If there is an unusual situation, suppose this passes, that's the supposition I'm working with, is there a provision for a waiver of variance in an unusual situation where a county can grant a plat that a city is developing? Is that envisioned in this legislation? Something unusual that wouldn't be in published guidelines. Guidelines can't anticipate every conceivable situation. It would be good to know that there was some sort of a variance process that could be applied here.
What was the lines you were referring to again?
I'm just referring to page 2 of the bill, between lines 16 and 21. It talks about they must be adopted with consistency to county guidelines. Assuming guidelines have been adopted and a plat has to be put through that sieve, that screen, that grid, if you will. There doesn't seem to be any room for flexibility in unusual situations.
Well, I think through the process where they go before...
I'm sorry. Down in line 23, Representative Leader just pointing out that the word variance is already in there. Thank you. That answers my question.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a very brief comment, and I think the conundrum here is that, you know, we're dealing with county roads. A county road, you know, in my district, Lake Street is a county road. Penn Avenue South is a county road. And I thought the points that were made by the person from Fridley about, you know, how this affects people at the neighborhood level is very well taken. So I think that, you know, for Representative Queasley, it's, I can understand what you're trying to do in terms of your district and you know, the stoplights and, you know, around in Olmsted County and why that would be a problem. But this is sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, which wouldn't be, I think, applicable, you know, in an urban setting. So, you know, I recognize the goals of this legislation, but, you know, I'm going to vote no because I think it's far too general, and I think, again, county roads are very different in terms of, you know, our urban setting and in some cases suburban settings versus, I think, the rural areas and some of the issues in Anoka County.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm ready to vote.
Okay, well, let's flip a coin, Splinter or John E-R-A-R. One of you can go and then what?
Splinter lost.
Okay, all right. Please, 3 minutes and then Roger, will you wind up? Go ahead.
I believe I'm Jerry Splinter. I'm the city manager of Coon Rapids. I'm from the urban section of Anoka County. And I think that's important to understand because the county tends to, in their road designs, tends to be more urban than or more rural than urban. And I don't think you can separate land planning from transportation planning. They are intertwined. How you create and where you place roads, what access points are available, have as much, it's a chicken or egg situation. One relates to the other. And with this bill, you split that. You give the county a veto power over the city's land planning. The other thing is, on one on, I'll try to remain brief, but on the county repealer, on the municipal consent is the word I'm looking for. The repeal of that doesn't allow for any. On one hand, the county is asking for input into a process, and then they are excluding municipalities from input into how they run their roads through the city. I think the county has to have it one way or the other. I don't think that the county should be able to override this situation nor the city be able to override. I think the current system is a balance, and I think it should be sustained. I can see additional timing problems. I can see numerous problems. But under the current system, the cities and the counties have to work together. And like most government processes, it isn't perfect. At times, it's ugly. You want to run a thoroughbred horse, sometimes you end up with a fast camel. But the fast camel gets you there. And I would implore you to consider that very carefully, especially my comments relating to the integration of planning and road design. There has to be... You can't have one overrule the other. And if you give the county this authority, they will have a basic veto power over many land planning issues that the city must deal with.
Thank you. Roger Peterson, would you like to sum up?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, I'm Roger Peterson, AMM, and I'll try to be really brief. 2 or 3 years ago, we worked out some compromises. To my knowledge, those things have been working. I was surprised when the bill came up this year because so far I have not heard of any specific examples of what's wrong. Everything we've been talking about is in theory, and theory is great, but what is wrong? I live in Washington County. My county commissioner has been very keen on plat authority over the years, but quite frankly isn't here because she thinks this bill went just a bit too far. And so I would implore you because... Again, I think that there was a really good point made by Representative Hornstein. there may be a mindset in a lot of the county people, and I don't want to say they're bad people. They have designed county roads that go through cities that were wonderful 15, 20 years ago when it was going through rural sections. We're urbanized now. You can't have a county road do exactly the same thing it did 30 years ago in a rural setting in an urbanized setting where you've got high density and thousands of homes. Finally, I guess I would like you to lay it on the table, allow us to sit down with the county people, have them bring up what cities are a problem, because quite frankly, none of them that I know of that are members of AMM are a problem. They've all tried to work. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you. There are a couple of questions, Representative Hausman.
Well, because there were some people who didn't testify, could we just hear which cities or municipalities they would have represented if we had heard their...
City of Andover, John, E-R-A-R.
Arar. Mr. Chairman, it's just Arar.
Arar.
That was the only one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Bob Vanosik sent in a note that MICA does support the bill.
Yes. He did not testify. Representative Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'd just like to point out that when a county highway is designed, certainly you had county roads like you had the ones that Representative Ornstein talked about, those were in existence. County standards to build a road has urban design standards now. They just don't build a rural road as was pointed out here. They can't do it because they can't even spend the state aid money on it if they don't design the urban standards.
Is there any more discussion? Otherwise, Representative Sigrun.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I came in a little bit late, and I've been kind of coming in and out of the debate, and maybe this is a question to Representative Leader on the design of a county road. I'm assuming that this whole discussion is about new roads or expanding county roads that may be in existence, and also kind of controlling the ability of the expansion of those roads and cities kind of building right up to a road and then having a lot of traffic problems. In that design process, is there an allowance for right-of-way that has to be also allowed for in the design process?
Representative Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Sigrun, there is, to the extent that they can do it. Sometimes it's platted, and the county, if the right-of-way isn't there, could try to acquire it, or else they have to change their design to try to comply. And basically what it would amount to, the urban standard would indicate that perhaps they can't have a four-lane because they don't have a right-of-way. They'd have to design an urban two-lane to urban standards, so they'd have to accommodate their design if they wouldn't have the right-of-way. I think, is that the question you're asking?
Yeah, I was trying to, you know, I think that maybe, and I'm not sure what the author is trying to accomplish exactly, but, I mean, I've been frustrated, and this is a state highway, but the highway that goes up 169 up north through Elk River was supposed to be a bypass years ago, and, of course, the city of Elk River has built right up to the edge of that highway. They've got stop signs now where there never were stop signs. It's the same old process of cities want to maximize their property development, but then in the process, a bypass now becomes a, you know, not a bypass and becomes a big traffic jam, and you defeat your purpose of trying to do all that. And so trying to have a balance of allowing cities to develop, but yet allowing for right-of-way and expansion if you need it for future, you know, road improvement. And Representative Cleasley, is that what you're trying to accomplish on this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sigrun, what I'm trying to accomplish is to do some planning. It seems that a lot of these road systems are put in online, and then all of a sudden we start seeing development happen around them. Usually when a county road is put in an urban setting, it's one of the first roads to go in, and it's the major artery, and then things branch off from that. Unfortunately, in developing areas, the county does that, probably doesn't acquire the control the accesses like they should, and then all of a sudden the development starts popping up along it, and then you start seeing all the problems that are associated with that. And this legislation is an attempt to try to give them some more plat approval of what is happening around their road. Yeah. you know, it's kind of a chicken and egg, but the repealer in Section 2 might be going a bit too far and taking away the city's input when the county is changing the road. I'm not as wedded to that as I am to the first part of the bill, which is trying to get the county some more approval on trying to control their access and their road that they have already built to make sure that they can have a system that operates and doesn't read the automatic gridlock.
I'd like to move to a vote on this since we are going to send this to local government. And I'm assuming that there's several people here in local government that can carry forth the battle. We have some people from out of town in the next bill I'd like to get in. Would that be satisfactory with all?
Yes.
All right. Would you like to renew your motion?
Chair, I'll renew the motion that House File 1913 be recommended to pass and sit the local government.
All in favor of that motion, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is approved and the bill goes to local government. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Solberg, House File 804. We'll do the best we can. We'll probably be around a few minutes over.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House File 804, recommended to pass, sent to the General Register.
Actually, it's going to go to Transportation Finance.
Yeah,
there's a P in it, so correct.
It's
going to
Finance.
Up in the committee, Representative Solberg, if you'd get going, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And we'll try to be brief. There's an amendment that should be in your packet, 0997FXA04. I think it made the 24-hour rule.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that amendment would put it in the form that I'd like to have it. If I could have
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the amendment A04.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment 0997X, is it? You're looking at the same one?
A04.
That's A04-0997X.
Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The bill now is in the shape that the author would like it, and please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, thank you very much for scheduling this. I think the first week of Governor Pawlenty's administration, Bland and Paper Company announced a major layoff and a closing down of two of their lines. The governor flew up to Grand Rapids, held a community meetings, both labor and industry, along with the community itself. And out of that meeting with the governor, he formed a task force on timber and timber products, wood resources. And one of the recommendations that comprehensive preliminary forest products industry task force recommended was to amend the laws to make gross weight vehicles limits more compatible with those in neighboring states for vehicles hauling forest products. And this is a bill that was introduced in last year. We did not seek a hearing on it last year as different interests came to the table to work out what is necessary to make sure that we don't ruin the roads as well. So that is reflected in the amendment that was given to you and passed and put on the bill. I have with me today two gentlemen who are very intimately involved in the timber products industry. Bob Olson works for the Bland and Paper Company, is active in the timber producers, and Clarence Johnson is graduated 1 year ahead of his brother in Black Duck, so we're Black Duckites, and he is a major logger and a timber hauler in the Black Duck area, and I'd like to have them an opportunity to give some brief testimony.
Who's first? So
we'll get Clarence first.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, introduce yourself, please, to the tape.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Clarence Johnson, and I currently serve as the president of Minnesota Timber Producers Association. I live in Black Duck where my son and I log together. I started logging in 1961. We support this legislation to increase truck weights in our industry. We thank the authors of this bill for bringing it forward. Times are tough for logging and for the mills that we sell our wood to, and we need help if we're going to have a better time in the future. Currently, Minnesota has the lowest truck weights of the states and provinces in our region and the lowest weights of any place that we are aware of. There's a chart in the material we provided the committee that shows this. We are not seeking to have 120,000-160,000 pounds from the state and the provinces, that we are asking that we are on the same level as Wisconsin. Wisconsin allows haulers carrying wood to get a permit that allows them to carry an additional 10,000 pounds in both the winter and summer. In order to protect the roads we all drive on, this legislation would also, number one, require us to put the six axle with brakes on our trucks. Number two, not carry the additional weight during spring road restrictions when our roads are the most vulnerable. Number three, not haul the additional weight on interstate highways. And number four, obey all rules and bridges posted, all road and bridge posted. This sixth axle is a significant cost to us and will reduce the net increase in payload, but we feel it is important to protect the roads. There is information from a federal study on the material we provide that shows that putting a sixth axle under the additional 10,000 pounds would cause the truck to do less damage than the roads than current law. We estimate that if we are allowed to carry this additional weight, the number of truckloads of wood moving each year in the state will decrease by 40,000 loads. This will be a significant savings to us, which we need if we are to become more competitive, and also a significant decrease in the amount of truck traffic on the roads. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've been hauling wood for more than 40 years. The tractors, trailers, tires, suspension, brakes are so much better than they used to be, it's hard to describe. My organization believes that I believe that this increased weight can be safely hauled. We also believe that it is vitally important in our future as we see the imports of wood from other states in Canada from 150,000 to over 500,000 cords per year because they have cost advantages over us. We have the wood here, but these imports have cost many loggers and small businesses in our community their jobs. In our area of the state, logging and the forest industry is the backbone of our economy. We need help, and this is one way that the state can help us. We urge you to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, briefly, Bob Olson from Blandon Company.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Olson. I'm a papermaker of Blandon Paper Company. I'm also the union co-chair of the Wood Fiber Employees Joint Legislative Council. Our organization represents unionized employees and colleagues in management of various forest products companies in Minnesota. It was formed 30-some years ago, and it's a means for labor and management to come together to protect our jobs and our industry. The economic times in our industry right now are very bad. At Blandon, nearly 300 people were permanently laid off about 15 months ago when we shut down two of our oldest machines. We've also seen other permanent shutdowns around the state: Brainerd, Bemidji, Marcel, Two Harbors, and the permanent reductions in these mills have come about to more than 1,500 employees. Some of the factors that impact us are beyond our control, but there are some of the factors here that are within our control. And the legislation in front of you today is dealing with the truck weights, and that is one of the factors that we can control. According to the Governor's Task Force on Competitiveness of the Primary Forest Products Industry, Minnesota has the lowest truck weights of any of the areas that were surveyed. When times are good and we've had some advantages like reasonably priced stumpage that we can live with, but Minnesota has the highest stumpage prices in the world, and we need to work on every cost factor that we can. And the transportation costs and truck weights are very big factors in our industry. As Clarence had testified about the benefits of moving wood to our mills, I'd also like to speak on the moving of our products to our customers. Many of our mills are dependent on the railroad, and if they move they can move their product by rail. The only other option is, and the only competition that exists, is to move the product by truck. With approximately 23% of the paper manufactured in our state being sold to customers within our state, trucks are a viable option and are currently utilized. Significant amounts of lumber and oriented strand board manufactured in Minnesota are also sold in Minnesota. We estimate by allowing trucks hauling our finished products to the market, our costs will be reduced by 13% for those shipments. We are fighting other countries and other regions for every sale, for the sales every day, and that's a big number to us. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our members drive on our roads every day, and we don't want our roads damaged. We don't believe that by adding the extra weights to these with the parameters involved in this legislation that the roads will stay in the same shape they're in or at least not be any more damaged. We do want to have jobs. We want the state to help us on these issues on this particular one that we can control, such as the truck weights. We urge you to support this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. You want Ms. Parker to testify? Or?
Mr. Chairman, anybody else who wants to testify for or against, you're welcome to. I cut down the list of testimony people that I was going to present, but I'm sure there would probably be comments from other people.
Briefly?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from the Department of Transportation. In the interest of time, I'll be brief. First of all, I would like to thank the timber haulers and the DNR for their cooperation in working with us on this bill. The department is basically neutral on this bill. We acknowledge that six axles spreads the weight on the road much better and is much better than having a five-axle truck. I have one reservation about this bill, which has to do with the definition of first haul and expands it. If you wanted to pass the bill out of here and take it up in finance and allow me to address the issue in that committee, that would be fine with me. Other than that, we have no objections to this bill. There needs to be a technical amendment to correct an amendment that was made in here that's put in the wrong place in the bill. We could also correct that in finance if you'd like to do that there.
Representative Silver, would that be...
Mr. Chairman, that's fine as well. And to be honest with the committee, too, I think there's going to also be, on page 5, another technical correction, I think, of adding the word pulp in one of the lines that is there as well.
Well, I know that you have a chance to finally read this bill before it gets to the final.
<Yeah. study. laughs> Mr. Chairman, I did just recently receive it, but it has been a long negotiations, and hopefully we're working very strongly with the departments. We're not trying to ruin our roads, but we're also trying to address an issue. I think that's extremely important for northeastern Minnesota.
Is there any other comments or discussion? If not, Representative Dean Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a quick question, perhaps for the author, maybe for Representative Leader, given his expertise in the area. We see that Minnesota stands at 80. I'm looking at this table here under Factor 3 of Transportation, and we see similar states like Wisconsin are greater than Minnesota. Why is Minnesota at 80 and other states are higher? Is it, you know, what advantage does Minnesota get, if any, or is Minnesota just behind the times and needs to update the axle weights?
Well, we haven't had a chance to raise the gas tax and increase the weight of our roads for 20 years. Who wants to answer that? Anybody got a Representative Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll take a shot at it. There's several reasons. For one thing, depends on how they determine their axle loading. Minnesota has a gross weight per axle. I don't know how these other, they sell five axle trailers a unit, but it doesn't say if it's by the pounds per square inch of tire width or whatever it is. And another factor sometimes involved is the when they set load limits is the soil types. Wisconsin, in my opinion, has got a different type, a better soil than we have in, probably in a, most of our timber areas up north, and that could be a factor too. But basically, it's an arbitrary thing sometimes, and depends on how they determine it.
And Mr. Chairman,
but again, too, the number of axles is a big factor.
Mr. Chairman, point of clarification, my understanding in that chart, some of those weights are special weights for forest products in those states and not a general application.
Can I do it?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion that House File 804, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to Transportation Finance.
Are there any other discussion on that? If not, why? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill moves to Transportation Finance.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
You're welcome. House File 509 will be continued probably to our next meeting or soon thereafter.
But not later today.
Not later today. We're not going to meet at 4:30 or 6:30 or whatever time you all were planning on. We're done for the day. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.